Hello and welcome. You're listening to Fourth Estate, the show where journalists talk journalism. Coming to you from 2SER in Sydney on Gadigal lands of the Eora Nation, right across Australia on the Community Radio Network and directly to your device across the globe via podcast. My name is Peter Frey and I am the co-director of the Centre for Media Transition at the University of Technology Sydney. And my producer today is, as ever, the wonderful Anthony Dockrell. Normally on this show, we talk to journalists about journalism, as I just said. But for the second time in as many shows, I'm going to make an exception. Why? Because in this podcast special, we are going to further explore the recently released report into Facebook and Google by the competition watchdog, the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission. At 619 pages, the Digital Platforms Inquiry is not for the faint-hearted, but as we speak, it's probably the world's most comprehensive look at the market power of Facebook and Google and what potentially to do about that. It comes with 23 recommendations, including no less than 4 proposed new industry codes, and covers everything from privacy, data protection, digital copyright, fake news, media literacy, industry regulation, data portability, the imbalance between the platforms and the media business, and suggestions for financial support for journalism with grants and tax breaks. You can check out my earlier interview with Rod Sims, the ACCC chair, on 2SER and its partner broadcasters, or via your favorite podcast app. Just search for Fourth Estate. That show is mainly about what the Inquiry has to say about journalism and its relationship with Google and Facebook. And one of the key ideas is a proposed new industry code which will compel financial payments from the platforms to journalism for the use of news content. And that goes to what the news media industry has been saying for some time to Google and Facebook, which is essentially, give us some money back for using our content for you lot to make so much money. The ACCC is giving the platforms 9 months to work with the news industry to create an acceptable code that, quote, treats news businesses fairly. But if they can't agree, it says another regulator, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, which will oversee the code, can step in and force the platforms to be fair. So there is the promise of a carrot and a bloody big stick. We will see how all that plays out, and in the end of the day, it all rests with the federal government, whether they accept all the recommendations from the ACCC report, some or none. So far, the noises from the Treasurer, Josh Frydenberg, have been very much in the favour of the ACCC and in journalism as well. But as I mentioned, there is plenty more to talk about in the Digital Platforms Inquiry, in particular the ACCC's ideas on data, privacy, and how to regulate this crazy converged media landscape where the power has shifted from publisher to consumer, from consumer to platform. So in the manner of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I've called in some friends to help me sift through the inquiry's recommendations and what they may or may not mean for us as consumers and we as an industry. So welcome to the show, Derek Wilding, the co-director of the Centre for Media Transition at UTS.
Thank you for having me, Peter.
It's lovely to see you. And Sasha Molitoris, a journo-turned-academic who also has the wonderfully exalted title of the Postdoc Research Fellow at the aforementioned centre. Hello, Sash.
Hey, Peter.
Welcome, doctors, I should say. So, yes, I know this is all a bit in-house, and I know it's a bit of a sausage fest, but frankly, I couldn't think of any two people better qualified to talk about the ACCC Digital Platforms Inquiry than you two. So, not least because the CMT helped out the ACCC on this inquiry with some background research, and I should add that it's gained funding from both Google and Facebook, so I guess we are kind of equal opportunity offenders. So let's start with some overall impressions. Derek, I mean, you've worked around in and around media regulation, media reform for much of your wonderful career, which is only not even half over, let's face it. what do you make of the thrust of the Digital Platforms Inquiry? What does it get right? What does it kind of miss?
Mm-hmm. I think the starting point is to say what an incredible resource it is. That it brings together so much, and indeed some things that we didn't know before. So the ACCC has not just looked at what's on the public record. They've used their investigation powers to go out and acquire information that the rest of us didn't have access to. They've done some original analysis. So this very long report actually, I think, helps establish the state of play in a number of different areas, and it's more it's more far-reaching in that way than similar work that's going on overseas. So that's an incredible effort. Overall, it's difficult to get a handle on it in a way because it covers so much ground. So it covers competition law, which is so different from, say, consumer privacy issues, and that's so different from copyright or from media content issues. And because it's covering all of those and it's taking a different approach in those different areas, it's hard to say, this is the score overall, because you really need to assess what its recommendations are.
We will drill down on that. Just stay with you for a second, Derek. The ACCC started out 80 months ago, and it started out sort of, we thought, looking at the new news media business and how it could rebalance the relationship with the platforms. It's gone, as you say, it's gone much, much deeper than that. But in that specific era, do you think they've got that right?
They're getting there. Yeah. I mean, people have different views on it. I think, you know, the most interesting aspect, in a sense, is how they characterize what digital platforms are now. So they have got closer to the publisher model in terms of how they characterize them. So they talk about the media-like functions of digital platforms. And they talk about how the impact that platforms are having on the news and journalism environment.
Why is it important that they got close to the publisher? Just for the listeners to explain that.
Okay. Well, I think if you start out thinking, if you ask the question, do we need some kind of regulation here? You need some kind of category or some kind of class by which you how you characterize these particular service providers in order to say, okay, well, we're going to regulate them in this way. Mm. So that raises the question then, well, are they the equivalent of media companies and so a certain set of obligations arises as a result, or are they something different from that? And I guess this, before all of this started, the assumption was that they're just kind of intermediaries. And some people in the news media business say, no, they're not. They're publishers and they should have the obligations of publishers. The ACCC's landed in between those two, but I do think it's getting closer to the publisher category than the pure intermediary. It's useful that they use this term content creator. And I think maybe personally, I think that's kind of critical to it, that platforms are not, at least in the news and journalism area, they're not content creators. So they should, in my view, they shouldn't have the same obligations that publishers have, news and journalism publishers have, but that doesn't mean that they should have no obligations. And so what the ACCC is really achieving here is helping us to steer a course through this and say, okay, well, given all these different things they do in each of these areas, let's work out what are their obligations. And the ACCC has by no means actually got us to that point of saying these are the obligations and this is how it should be done. In a number of areas, they're saying actually this is the path to get us there now.
Let's go work it out, these codes. Yeah. I mean, of course, it does depend on whether the federal government accepts their definition.
Mm.
I mean, it enshrines it in some form of legislative reform. I'm assuming that has to come out of a lot of this.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was really interesting, I think, that when this report was launched on Friday, Josh Frydenberg, the Treasurer, was saying, was actually describing the value of news and journalism within society and describing it as an essential public good, which does, I think, really help with that. With getting us to that point of saying, okay, there is something special here. We're prepared to recognise that it has a function over and beyond, say, manufacturing of cars or some other kind of consumer good. There's something here that is got this inherent kind of social value to it, and there's a problem with the business model for creating it. So it's in this environment where there's now these very dominant players that are affecting how you produce that good. So we're prepared to actually recognise its value and step in certain ways.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I'm bringing you in, Sash. I mean, both you and I used to work in, the Sydney Morning Herald. It went, as we all know, went through a massive digital transformation. Still in it in many ways. But, if we go back, say, 8, 9, 10 years ago, it wasn't that, it was quite common for the leaders of that company to talk about essentially equating journalism with a kind of widget. We were there making content widgets. Well, and it's really indicative of how that debate has moved in this last decade to what Derek just said, that, you know, actually, no, that even the treasurer, the Liberal treasurer, thinks we're a bit more than just widget makers. Does that give you some sort of warm inner glow?
It does, I guess. I mean, there's been that realization all along that news and journalism has some sort of significance. You know, it has a real public good element, but it did get lost a little bit along the way, and it's coming to the fore again. I think that seems to be the feeling. So it is great. I agree with Derek that it's great to see that recognized so explicitly and strongly in this report.
You're going to talk about privacy in a minute, but just what's your overall take on this report? You know, I mean, we've been waiting for this for a long time.
Yeah. Look, I've been very impressed all the way along with how the ACCC has handled this inquiry over 18 months. You know, the extent to which it consulted with various groups, the number of submissions it received, the depth and detail of those submissions. The preliminary report back in December was a very impressive, substantial piece of work. And now this piece of work is even bigger at 619 pages. So there's a lot to digest, and there's still a lot to compare between the first preliminary report and this one to see what is different between the two. So this, we'll still need some time, really, to get our head around it, as
things,
Derek said.
Yeah, well, a few things have gone missing in between the prelim and this one. I mean, one thing that comes straight to my mind is the preliminary report suggested that there should be tax breaks if you were a subscriber, which has got lost. Why is that, you think?
Look,
too hard?
I can't.
Cost too much?
I can't say. Maybe there was a strategy there that the ACCC went hard in its preliminary report so it could pull back a little bit and see
Juliet
much
balcony.
More palatable. Yeah, the Juliet balcony. Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's they made a comment somewhere, I think, that that there's a difference between media that has a subscription model and media that doesn't rely on a subscription model. So it just relies on, say, an advertising model. And if you're giving the break to consumers who are paying the subscription, then you're helping that part of the industry and not the other part of the industry. So, you know, they've clearly noticed a few of those additional aspects in this period between the preliminary report and the final report. But just, I don't know, just how convincing it is that, in fact, you shouldn't try some of those things because there may be some distortion is, I mean, I kind of question that. Like the other aspect of the tax offsets for the production of journalism, I know, yeah, sure, there are some problems around actually identifying who it is that gets that. And so you don't give it to, say, an entire publication or entire, say, broadcasting operation because they do a whole range of things that are not public interest journalism. But it does strike me that that there must be a way of actually characterizing something like public interest investigations. We've just seen, you know, a big one this weekend around Crown and
China, yep.
You know, and we know that there are lots of examples of those. If in the academic world we can say, okay, well, this kind of research project is deserving of this kind of support, and we say that in film with Screen Australia, and we say that in theatre and literature with the Australia Council, and we can find criteria to actually identify a particular work that we want to support. It's a bit puzzling as to why you can't actually isolate something, if not everything, that might help.
Well, that's just on that point and sticking there, because one of the things that did survive was this idea of making it easier, and it's not defined really, but making it easier for news media to get charitable status. And when I asked Rod Sims a similar question to what you've just been exploring there, does that mean every news media organization gets it? He said, yeah, well, it's still work to be done, because as we all know, news media is a very broad church. And, you know, parts of, say, you know, the Daily Mail concentrates on cats up trees and Kardashians, but it also does, you know, what you might call more serious journalism, but nonetheless. So does the Daily Mail get treated the same way as, you know, the Financial Review or the Australian or the Sydney Morning Herald or whatever? What do you think about that? I mean, is it impossible to work that out? Should we give everyone a tax break?
Well, if the Daily Mail can, at some point in the future point towards some kind of activity that is deserving of that kind of classification, then I don't see why it shouldn't be eligible. But, I mean, there's two aspects, aren't there? There's one is you've got to get the criteria which is able to identify what the work is, but then you've also got to have, on this particular proposal, then you've got to have someone that's prepared to make a philanthropic donation for that particular entity. And that's different from if it was through the tax system, whereby you do it, you meet the criteria, and then you can claim the tax break. Yes, here, you've actually got to find the donor as well.
Yeah, so when I asked Rod Sims about that, I asked him, had he any idea from Treasury or Finance the numbers? He said they were quite small, so I think you're probably right. Mm. Let's move back to USAF's privacy. Mm-hmm. We're all waiting for your very excellent book to come out.
Thank you.
Well, but in the meantime, Recommendation 16 goes to goes to the heart of the matter.
It's, well, they've got
it wants stronger Privacy Act provisions.
Right. Well, they've got to start. What I'd say here is the ACCC wasn't really asked to look into privacy.
No,
it wasn't. What, you know, they were asked to look into the impact of digital platforms on news and advertising, on media and advertising. I think that was the phrase. And so, should they have looked into privacy? Well, I think once we think about today's media ecosystem more comprehensively, it was just, it's a great thing that they did and they needed to. Privacy is just such a big issue and it gets to the very heart of the issue here about market power of these digital platforms. You know, it's the data that these platforms have that gives them all their power.
That's the deal, right? We get the services for free,
right,
with hooks across the word free,
yep,
and they get our data.
Exactly. So I commend the ACCC on taking privacy so seriously, making it such a big part of their investigation, and then on coming up with these really strong recommendations, realizing as they do in their recommendations that privacy is totally inadequately protected at the moment, and those protections need to be beefed up.
And also in Recommendation 17, it kind of has this sort of Cambridge Analytica moment, and then that flows into this overhaul of the Act proposal. We were talking about getting rid of some of the exemptions for things like political parties and de-identification of information, so no more pseudos, you know. On,
right.
What's going on there? What are they aiming at?
Well, there's a whole lot of detail in these recommendations that is all really geared towards having a more comprehensive set of legal privacy protections. Currently, they're woefully inadequate. So, yes, the Privacy Act will be, according to these recommendations, the Privacy Act should be improved and strengthened. But apart from that, there needs to be a much broader reform of privacy law. And I think Australia, like other countries, is just screaming out for it.
Yeah, I mean, look, one of the kind of, if you like, overarching themes of this whole report is that, in a sense, we've all been a little bit asleep. You know, you look at the numbers of the penetration of Google and Facebook, and on nearly everywhere you look, you know, this massive penetration, between 17 and 19 million users a month, depending on which platform you're looking at, and then all the subsidiary platforms off it. So have we all been asleep at the wheel on this sort of stuff?
Well, to some extent, but what I think works so well here is that privacy is brought into this whole larger question of these digital platforms, how they operate, what their effect is on consumers. And as a result, we can't, from this report, we can see that we can't think about the news media, for instance, or we can't think about other issues to do with digital platforms without taking into account privacy, because we need to realise that that's the fundamental way that these digital platforms operate.
You know, there's currency.
You know, it's almost a cliche to say now that data is the new oil.
Mm. I thought it was a new Bitcoin, but anyway. So let's go on to another matter. So you, Sash, myself to some extent, although I'm not my strong suit, I'd have to say, and Derek, we all sweated on the media regulations framework part of this, and we've thought about this, talked about it, written a bit about it. I know that sounds about as exciting as eating 10 sayos all at once, but it does go to the heart of the digital world we live in and how it operates. Derek, what do you think? I mean, has the ACCC got it right here, or did it not go far enough on the suggestions around a new framework?
Well, I don't see why it's as boring as eating steaks. That's right. Anyway, I'm a corn
thank you
thins
for
person myself.
Well, I hear you're a brand person, are you? But
anyway. Yeah, thank you so much. What was the question?
Media regulations.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Because we live in a converged world. Right. Mm-hmm. So does this adequately recognize the converged world? You know, we have a set of frameworks, regulations now, which, you know, get us all sorts in all sorts of tangles, doesn't really adequately realize the world that we live in is a converged world where, you know, a broadcaster is a website provider, you know, a newspaper is a radio station, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm. Yeah. So the ACCC has gone into this really tricky territory, which is recognizing that yes, we might get the same content via many different platforms, and why do we have these different regulations that apply depending on how you get it, as opposed to what the content is? So that is something that that the ACCC is by no means the first to raise that. So in some ways, it's been under discussion for a couple of decades, but certainly it was on the agenda with the Convergence Review a few years ago, and the ACMA has pointed to some of these issues. The Department of Communications has done so, and now the ACCC is there. So its challenge, I think, is in this concept of developing something that is platform neutral. Mm. And what do you do? How do you get to a position where you've got some rules that might make sense across different platforms? Without necessarily making everything, eradicating the differences that need to be there. So they do say that they're not seeking to get a uniform environment, but they're seeking to get an environment where like providers or like content is treated the same as much as possible. Mm. And I suppose where they don't, where that's as far as they get. So where they don't go is what's beyond that. What does that actually mean?
Yes, they tell us what we kind of already knew.
Yeah,
in a way. Right?
Yeah, that's right. But so,
it's kind of no man's land. Out
that's
there.
Right.
The point of no return.
This is the eternal question about what do you do about Netflix if it's getting a lot of attention. Audiences are moving from television to streaming services. Ooh. Netflix doesn't have those obligations like Oz content, Australian content and children's content. The broadcasters do. They've still got to do that, and it's expensive and it doesn't necessarily generate the audiences, certainly in terms of children's content. What do you do about that? Do you impose new regulations on the providers like Netflix, or do you remove the obligations that apply to free-to-air broadcasters?
So if you were king of the world, what would you do?
Well, I'm very reluctant to remove all obligations, but I can see what's called this regulatory imbalance, this disparity that's there. Mm-hmm. So there's this question about how do you redefine your policy priorities, or how do you do it? And so there's a lot of discussion about, do you, for example, remove the, say, the broadcast quotas and come up with a kind of a financial obligation that, and the broadcasters would continue to have a financial obligation, but then you'd also impose that kind of obligation on providers like Netflix. So there's a lot of merit in that. But maybe the answer is somewhere in the middle, that it's something of one or something of the other. But the question is, does that apply in the same way to Google or to
that's a great
Facebook,
question.
Which are different again from Netflix.
Of course. And, well, just in the similar vein as that question, one place where they didn't go, although it may yet go in these codes that have to be negotiated between the platforms and news media, but one place it didn't explicitly go was this kind of idea of a content tax on the platforms. Mm-hmm. Why do you think it stopped at that? Because that was what the, if you were going to play to the crowd, as in play to the journos, that was item number one, along with break up Google and Facebook, which was would have been item 1.1 or 1.2.
Well, listening to Rod Sims talk on your show the other day, he said very clearly that that's still very much open. You know, their recommendations still very much leave open the idea for that sort of content levy.
But it wasn't explicit.
No, it's in the code of, it could arise from the code of conduct.
But in any event, I suppose they didn't set out to solve the Netflix problem. I've taken us there because we're talking about the principle of it, but they're looking at news, principally at news and journalism, not, say, drama and entertainment.
True, but the same solution gets applied to the Netflix. So, you know, tax Netflix in some way so that content can be used to make Australian programs.
Yes, it's the same principle.
Right? Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, and just on that question, I know, I mean, in a sense, it would have been probably impossible to do this, but it would have been very popular with certain groups to have broken up Facebook and Google. ACCC, could they have done that? And does it matter that they haven't, Derek?
Well, you know, I'm a very cautious person. I mean, to some extent, I think I can't see the argument for that in the environment in which we exist. And to a certain extent, regulators have had the opportunity to watch these things as they've developed. They've seen these acquisitions, and there hasn't been action taken to this point. So absolutely, I can see the justification in the competition-based recommendations for any future acquisitions, that in fact you might scrutinise them more carefully. You might take into account, as they're suggesting, potential consolidation or potential ramifications down the track that don't apply right now. And you might in future stop something like the acquisition of WhatsApp by Facebook in the future. But as to the point of actually calling for divestment, then in our environment, I think I find that quite hard to support in principle, given where we are. But of course, there's the practicality of it. That I mean, how in Australia could you demand that that happen?
Yeah, no, I agree.
And it is worth noting the more radical suggestion by some academics that these companies should be put into public ownership. They shouldn't be in private hands.
Are you one of those sorts of academics, Sasha?
I can't say no. I find it a very interesting argument. I think, you know, A, it's extremely unlikely, and B, I'm not sure that's the right way to approach it. But
I was always taken by the view when, you know, Fairfax, for instance, would complain about Facebook. I think, you know, wonder what they would say if someone in Fairfax had thought, oh, let's start this thing that does basically the same functions as Facebook.
Mm.
I mean, that would have solved the whole problem for the news media industry, of course, if they thought about Facebook before Facebook did.
on the competition aspect, I guess Sasha pointed before to the point about market power and data area. And so what is really important about this is that it's looked through all of this evidence and it's actually come to a conclusion that both Facebook and Google, those two in particular, have market power in two or three different markets within Australia. So there's a sense of for the record that that is now established and clearly the case. What the ACCC doesn't do, and probably, you know, this is good that it steered this kind of middle course, is that it's not said that that those two firms have misused their market power in these specific ways and as a result action needs to be taken, but it's established that in fact this is the case, that that there is no denying the fact that in relation to search and in relation to news feed, social media and so on, there's these two have this position. That means that it's perfectly reasonable in a public policy sense that they are scrutinised very closely.
Yeah, no, and to that point, I think they made a very clear point of putting the big numbers in the report. Mm. Just for the record here, over 19.2 million Australians use Google search a month. 17.3 million use Facebook, 17.6 watch YouTube, which is owned by Google, of course, and 11.2 million access Instagram, owned by Facebook, and then there's WhatsApp. I mean, they're incredibly... One thing I put to Rod Sims was, so aren't they just doing something that people love? And should we just let them alone and keep doing things that people love? Because clearly they're very popular.
Yes, they're letting people do what they love. But no, they should not be left alone because there can be all sorts of unethical practices and dodgy practices, quite simply. And this is, so to bring it back to privacy, I guess, on this point, one of the other recommendations we haven't mentioned yet are to do with essentially versions of consumer law, you know, bringing in versions of consumer law to apply to privacy practices. And that's something I'm a big believer in, having done my research into privacy as well. So it specifies, the ACCC specifies a prohibition against unfair contract terms, that was recommendation 20, and then in recommendation 21, a prohibition against certain unfair trading practices. Now, these things sound really elementary. They sound so obvious that, you know, why are we even talking about them? But the fact is, when it comes to privacy, that sort of those standards haven't been applied. They need to apply, and they need to be that point needs to be made very explicit.
So we're in a whole new world here on that.
Yeah, I mean, it should be elementary, but it hasn't been. So yes, we are.
So going back to recommendations, recommendation 14 explores the idea of the platforms should do more on what they call credibility signaling, which isn't the virtue signaling that the Australian newspaper goes on about all the time. it's forms of, if you like, digital branding or algorithmic use to identify content reliability, trustworthiness, and other kind of factors. What do you think about that, Derek? This sort of trust, kind of enhancing trust in journalism, kind of.
Yeah, I think that that has potential. That we don't really know how much potential it has, but it has.
It
does feel good, and it's. I think to the extent that it promotes verification techniques and fact checking and trust factors and so on, then that's great. So but to be fair, Google and Facebook and others are actually taking a fair bit of action in that area themselves. They have invested in that. This is. I suppose taking it one step further, but not two steps. So two steps would be to actually require them to do that in a regulatory sense and imposing penalties if they don't do that. This is a recommendation that the regulator actually monitor what they're doing and report on it, which seems like, particularly for the subject matter, what we're talking about here, this kind of credibility signaling, actually seems like a reasonable approach to say, okay, all right, so let's have some oversight, some reporting, but don't intervene too strongly here, because actually there are some things that are being done that are quite valuable, whether that's the trust indicators or first draft news or other kinds of fact checking. They're good initiatives. So let's just kind of have some transparency of that and some reporting on it. So yeah, that's a worthwhile aspect.
Yeah, absolutely. And Sash, you've done quite a lot of work on trust.
Look, I have, and I've been really heartened that trust was really a big theme with the ACCC's report here. It comes up again under data and privacy, this notion of users needing to be able to trust the way their data is being handled. And it really is crucial. You know, all sorts of philosophers and various other academics have just written about the value of trust, the importance of trust, and shown the link between high-trusting societies and thriving societies. You know, so we know that societies where trust reigns are societies that really work well. And we have a problem with trust at the moment.
Do you think fixing trust on the platforms will also fix the trust problem with news media? Because let's not, you know, shy away from this. We have a trust issue in news media, as our work and other work has shown.
Yes, I think they're connected. I think they're deeply connected. And I think we have this very complicated media ecosystem now. And there is a problem with trust in different ways with, say, Facebook compared to with news media, say. You know, digital platforms and news media, they're not identical, but there is a trust issue with both. And if we address trust with one, we will hopefully also help build trust in the other. But yeah, there are trust issues with both, and we need to work on them.
Okay, we've got room for a few more questions. But Derek, you travel the world talking about media regulation, media reform, these sorts of things. How do you... You know, with that sort of hat on, or with that view on, how do you think this report? How influential do you think this report will be on the planet, as it were? You know, are people looking at Australia for leadership here, or by default, but for leadership anyway?
Yeah, well, it has certainly got a lot of attention already. So, as you said, it's been going on, I think, for about 18 months now, and so the first round with the draft report got attention. Rod Sims personally has been recognised for the work of the commission. When I was at a conference towards the end of last year, even then people were paying attention to it.
Which one was that?
was it the regulatory conference? Very nice, thank you.
The one in Berlin or?
I'm going no further. And, okay. Then, and then I went to one in Washington this year, which was a gathering of, you know, a lot of people that are involved both in regulation and policy. And so, yeah, people are aware of what the ACCC is doing because it fits within this international environment that so the UK government has issued its online harms white paper, which is which looks at a number of these issues but a number of other aspects. I think you mentioned at the start the Cancross review of journalism in the UK, which was doing something similar to the ACCC, and I'll just come back to that in a moment. But in a way, the strength of the ACCC and what, from my observation, what people have said about it in the context of those other, knowing what, as they do, what's happening in their own jurisdictions, is that the ACCC has taken this approach that covers competition law as well as copyright and privacy.
Put
and
things media. Together.
Yeah. So there are a number of different people watching it. Whether or not, to that is a drawback in a way as well, I suppose, in that it's not directly transferable elsewhere because this activity around different domains, and they're all related to our peculiar frameworks within Australia.
Point.
So I wouldn't expect it to be picked up and applied somewhere else. But at the same time, the thinking that's and the evidence gathering is an important part of this international work that's being done. On that Cancross point, I mean, it was interesting actually that I think it's gone the other way now, and that so the Cancross review reported a few months ago, and the business code, the code that the ACCC is now proposing about how the platforms would be required to have codes that they register with the ACMA that kind of govern their dealings with news media, that's something that is quite similar to what Cancross has proposed. So clearly this kind of this thinking that's happening in different countries around the world is actually quite productive in that elements of the best of everywhere are available for others to consider.
I've got a slightly unfair question for you, but just let's put our boots, our collective feet into the shoes of Google and Facebook. What do you think they would be thinking about this, Derek?
Well, I think there's not... Well, you raised the question about should there be a recommendation for divestment? Mm. And so clearly the nuclear option hasn't been proposed.
So they'd be happy about that?
They'd be happy about that. They'd be happy, I think, that the idea that was being floated about an algorithms regulator, which might require them, if it were possible anyway, to reveal confidential commercial information to a regulatory authority is not being proposed. So they'd be happy about that. However, there are so many different areas of recommendation here that, in fact, suddenly I think the regulatory framework within which they work is being beefed up, you know, across the board, or there's the potential for it, depending on how the government reacts to it.
Of course.
So so it's a lot more work for them. There's obligations coming that could potentially come in across a range of different areas. So, but, you know, that's one of those costs of business, and it won't send them out of business. Maybe the areas that I'm not so involved in are the ones that are actually the most significant for them, which is data management and privacy and what they can do on that front, because it's unclear to me just how significant those are and how they will affect their business practices. The other aspects I think that we've been talking about here, they're manageable. There are a number of players within the Australian environment that have to comply with a whole range of obligations like this. It's not unreasonable that we would expect these players to do so.
And perhaps it's illustrative that they haven't gone crazy in their response to the DPI. Yeah. Far from it. In fact, they've hardly said much and said they're going to cooperate with these various consultations that are now going to continue. Mm. But to that point, the Algorithmic Council, I'm glad you raised that because, that was a biggie in the preliminary report and it seems to have... It's still there, but it's not there in that kind of explicit way it was in the preliminary report. Is that... what do you think of that, Sasha?
Well, I was quite impressed with the initial preliminary recommendation for the algorithmic oversight. So, you know, I'd hate to see that.
I think what they've done in terms of the news media business, I think there's a provision that they that news media providers will have to be told of changes before, and which was also something that the council was going to do. So I think they've gone some way. They just haven't established this
new. That was a really good observation, I think, about the impact upon news and journalism of those algorithm changes is so can be so profound, more so than just for a business in another area of the economy, because of
the nature
the
of
fact that it's a public good and that it's
you look at BuzzFeed, basically its business model was, you know, I think it was 1.70% of its people were coming to BuzzFeed through their 70% of people going to BuzzFeed were getting the content through Facebook, so it was the single biggest most important thing, and then they changed the algorithm and they couldn't get there. So, and we know what's happened. So anyway, I'm sorry, I slightly interrupted your thought there.
I guess if I think about the issues here, there are some recommendations that are peculiarly Australian and quite specifically Australian, and there are others that really are international in their scope. And privacy is really ultimately largely international. You know, we need to think about privacy in global terms. These are multinational companies operating all around the world, Google and Facebook, of course. And so, you know, what we get now, it doesn't really make sense for laws of countries to be vastly out of line. There needs to be some sort of global consistency. It doesn't mean every country needs to have exactly the same privacy laws, I don't think, but there needs to be some sort of level of global acknowledgement of this issue and what needs to be done. And I think, you know, the tech companies have started saying this as well. There needs to be some sort of global solution when it comes to privacy laws. So the model that we that's most often cited now is the European one, the General Data Protection Regulation, and just some observations on that. That's which in some ways the ACCC is taking some steps towards in some of its recommendations. But it has now been in force in Europe for a year or so, and it's still very unclear. And having spoken to a good lawyer friend, a lawyer who's a good friend, there are still a lot of problems. Even companies don't really understand how it's the details of how it operates, the difference between a data processor and a data controller, and those sort of the really significant details. So, look, this is we need to think in a global context. That's going to be hard, but it's not impossible, and it will take some time. And I think what this report does really well is take that global context into account. As Rod Sims keeps saying, he's in touch with all the equivalent bodies overseas. You know, and I think that's really important.
Yeah, no, he travels more than Derek. My final question.
So
my final question. Let's look into the crystal ball and let's look forward, say, 18 months. So let's assume all these codes have been, it's been consultation process. The federal government has largely backed the ACCC's report. The codes are now in place. ACMA's got, you know, these new teeth. ACCC's got this new digital branch. All these things are in play and the platforms are playing nicely. Or nicer. So what do we see, Derek and Sash? What do we see? What is our picture? How rosy? I mean, is journalism saved in 18 months? Is that what's going to happen? I mean, what sort of world are we going to be living in if the ACCC report flows through, as it flows through?
Well, maybe I'll deal with that if, and then the harder question to Sasha. So at least on the media side, on the media framework, there was to be a review, and that's changed in this final report to what the ACCC calls a process as deemed appropriate by government for moving to this kind of harmonised media or converged media regulatory environment. And it's hard to know what that means. It's been something that's been on the cards for some time, but there's a fairly big task, but important task there, which is looking not just at these aspects, but how, because the ACCC, for example, hasn't looked at into aspects like responding to violent content, like the response to Christchurch. So there are other components, even though they've been wide ranging. There are some things that they haven't looked into. Of course, their brief didn't extend to telecommunications and so on. And there's a bigger task there, which is reforming that communications regulatory environment. So there's a question, first of all, about whether these content issues are tried to solve them on their own, or whether they fit within that that kind of bigger reform process.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's that bigger reform process, 18 months from now till then, to the rebirth of journalism is maybe a bit hopeful, but
right. Yeah. No, I take your point. There's a lot to be done. And as you say, even though this has got 619 pages, there's a whole other 690 pages waiting out there to be written.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sasha?
Well, I'm by nature an optimist, I guess. I think these are just very significant recommendations and they point us in the right direction where if they're adopted, news media and journalism has a better chance of doing the job it needs to do in supporting democracy. And also, people's data isn't exploited, where people are engaging with these services on a more fair level, where their data is being used in a way that's more transparent and more fair. Mm. So that's all I would hope, that these recommendations are implemented, and that leads to an environment where there's more fairness in the way people's data is being used and the way these transactions go on, and also journalism and news media gets a nice boost.
Yeah, okay. That same principle probably applies in the journalism area, that kind of that harm principle, because some of what underpins these recommendations is the do no harm to journalism, which is that business code, that code of practice about the relationship between the platforms and the news media, that is possibly the most important of the recommendations in that field. Because yes, if that is drafted in such a way that it really does require some serious thinking about that, and that code of practice is only registered by the ACMA if it's got strong protections in it, then those kinds of practices like sudden changes that really dramatically to algorithms that really dramatically affect news should start to disappear from this environment. So,
and not to mention also the potential for more money to flow into journalism
exactly.
for the use of the content.
And notwithstanding what I said before about the kind of the time frame, some initiatives like that are obviously possible within our existing regulatory framework. Those kinds of codes can be developed. We have the regulator there, the ACMA, that's been working with these kinds of processes as well as service providers for many years. So even if we don't have the full review of the communications framework, some of these suggestions are able to be advanced, you would think, within that time period that you're pointing to.
Well, on those two very positive notes, that's about all we have time for. Derek Wilding, the co-director of the Center for Media Transition, and Sasha Molitoritz, the postdoctoral fellow and author of a forthcoming fantastic new book on privacy. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks, Bruno.
And thank you all for listening to Fourth Estate. This edition was recorded at the studios of 2SER and heard across the country on the community radio network. And make sure you've subscribed to Fourth Estate on your favorite podcast app so you can hear us talk about media, politics, and everything in between at your leisure. We'll be back very soon with much more on the Fourth Estate, but in the meantime you can stay in touch with us on Twitter, where our handle is Fourth Estate AU. And many thanks to my producer Anthony Dockrell. My name is Peter Frey, and thank you very much for listening.